broadcasting from Dublin, Ireland, and around the world on TalkingBrawlsMMA.com and iTunes. You're listening to Ireland's premier mixed martial arts show.
This is Mike Dolce,
Ian McCall, James Little Evil Pulver,
the Crippler Chris Leaving,
Frank the Legend Shamrock.
For your voice of the UFC Octagon. And now, we are live at Talking Ball.
When featherweights get hit by me, it's a whole different ballgame.
The entire country of Ireland is shut down for this.
I don't just knock them out. I pick the round.
That's the real deal, ladies and gentlemen.
There's not a man alive that can beat me.
Seaver pushing Seaver all over him.
We're not here just to take part.
We are 7 days away from one of the biggest nights in Irish mixed martial arts history. Welcome to the Talking Brawls MMA.com preview of UFC Fight Night Boston. I am your host, as always, Niall McGrath. The big lineup, obviously, today is we're going to break down the show. We're going to welcome in four of Ireland's most well-known mixed martial arts media. First of all, I'm going to welcome in Peter Carroll from SevereMMA.com, Fightland and the Irish Mirror. Petey, how are you, my friend?
I'm good, man. I'm good. Just a bit broken up after the result earlier, but we talked about that already.
Definitely. Manchester United, unfortunately, lost today. And we're obviously big fans, so not a good day on that front, but lots to look forward to later on in the show. Joe Riley from TalkingBrawlsMMA.com and host of Off The Brawl podcast. Joe, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing well, Niall. How's things?
Excited about next weekend. I cannot wait. Buzzing. Fergus Ryan from Santa MMA Show and the Irish Independent. Fergus, how are you?
Great.
Jesus, that's a very very subdued. Welcome. You're not excited about the fight week that's in front of us?
No, I am indeed. No, I'm looking forward to this chat now.
Fergus trying to sabotage Talking Brawls MMA.com podcast as per usual. We expect that of him at this stage. Fig O'Farrell here is also from Stant MMA and a regular podcaster on the Talking Brawls MMA.com network.
How are you getting on? No, very good to be live in studio and looking forward to talking about the MMA with the lads.
We're not actually live, Fig, but... Yeah, Fig's in studio here with me. So, guys, obviously a massive, massive fight card coming up on Sunday. Sunday, yes, it is Sunday. So a few people have been asking me about that, why it's Sunday. I'm not too sure, really, but it is Sunday. So... we have a huge amount of fights to look forward to. Obviously, we have Paddy Houlihan in action. We have Caleb Henry. We have Conor McGregor in the biggest fight probably in Irish mixed martial arts history for the reasons that are going to precede it. Obviously, Conor wins. He gets a title shot against Jose Aldo. And also on the card, we have Norman Park from Bushmills up in Northern Ireland. Okay, guys, first of all, it's a huge night. I just want to get all your takes. I'll start off with Fergus Ryan. How much of a pivotal night is this on Sunday for Irish mixed martial arts?
It's a pivotal month because if you consider, we've obviously got the four lads in Boston, and then we have Neil Seary the following weekend in Sweden. So it's going to be a pivotal month. In terms of, you know, are the fights winnable and can we push on from this? I think absolutely. I think people are going to have to realize that, like Conor has been saying, and anyone who listened to him, like, they're not there to make up the numbers. They are going to be competitive. And I'd be amazed if in February we're talking about how disappointing January was for Irish MMA.
We're not here to take part, we're here to take over, I think were the exact words. Fergus O'Farrell, I'm going to put that to you next. How pivotal is this period in Irish mixed martial arts?
Yeah, you know, I mean, it all kind of spawns back from that that great night in July 19th. You know, all the Irish guys on the card and Gunny Nelson getting the win, you know, 6-0 really. And it, you know, just kind of had things not gone all our way, I don't think there'd be the hype around this Boston event as there is, you know. A lot of people calling it UFC Dublin 2 and that kind of thing. And then, you know, it's just going to free-for-all from here. And obviously, as Fergus says, and I agree with him completely, that he'd be surprised if come February we were talking about a disappointing January. And, you know, I feel we're going to go from here and build on into a massive, massive summer event, which is the hope. And also, Niall, just to educate you, the fight is on a Sunday, as Monday is Martin Luther King Day in the States.
Ah, so that's the reason.
There we go, lads. Thanks for that, Fig. Peter Carr, I'm going to put that to you next.
How much of a pivotal month is it? It's huge. Obviously, you know, Conor wins this fight. He's going to fight for a world championship. That's obviously the holy grail of every martial artist. And, you know, our small island now, we keep on adding fighters to the roster. It's going to be huge. And look, you know, this has massive implications when you're looking forward to a stadium date. There's enough evidence there to suggest that, you know, there's everything is in place now for a stadium date to go ahead in the summer. And let's be honest, if McGregor doesn't win against Sabre, that's going to be taken away. And that's really what it is all about here. Obviously, with Kyle Pendred, he's looking to go 3-0.
Yeah.
Paddy Hoolan, I'm expecting Paddy to be brilliant, obviously bouncing back from a win. And Norman Park, I can see him against T-Bow there as well. It's obviously a huge fight for him to get himself into the rankings. So it's a big month. And of course, Siri then against Beale. Huge.
Yeah, absolutely huge altogether. Okay, let's get the fight picks and underway. Obviously, we've Paddy Hoolahan first off of the Irish interest on the prelim card on Fox Sports 1. And obviously, he's going to be on BT Sport 1 for people in the UK and Republic of Ireland. I look at this fight and I've looked at Shane's record. I watched a few of his fights. We obviously know what Paddy can do. Shane, a lot of his losses have been by rear naked choke. Obviously, Paddy is a great choke artist. Badly phrased there, but you know what I mean. A mixed martial artist who likes to use chokes. This one sets up really well for Paddy Fergus, yeah?
Yeah, it does. I like yourself now. I watched a couple of Shane Howell's fights, and he's a bit of a wild man. He doesn't seem to, like, he walks forward. He doesn't check kicks. He doesn't move his head much. He'll take one to give one, and he loads up on his punches. So I think Paddy's going to be faster. I think Paddy is a bit of a wild man himself. I think he's going to be better at that wild man style than Howell. I can see him changing levels, getting a takedown, and doing what maybe I think four or five fellas have done to Shane Howell already and take his back and choke him out.
Sorry, and Joe Riley. Joe, how do you think this fight's going to go down for Patrick or Shane Hell?
Well, I'm expecting a win from Paddy. I think it's been a match made in a way where, you know, like after the back of that obviously upset in Canada there, I think this one's going to go well for Paddy and hopefully be 2-1 in the octagon, and then we can start looking at, depending on how impressive he is, look at a ranked opponent next.
Definitely. And Peter, you know, Paddy was speaking to him on Friday. He said he's learned a huge amount from this loss. You know, how do you see this going then?
Yeah, I'm expecting Paddy to be better than we see him. We see him taking big leaps now between his different fights. It's interesting, this one, because these guys are two very tall flyweights. You know, they're both, like, Paddy's 5'9", Shane Hell's 5'8", which is very big for the flyweight division. But Hell looks a bit slower than Paddy from what I've seen of him. He left his back open if you saw against Ray Borg. Now, obviously, Ray Borg took his back fantastically well. Massive transition to get there. It was explosive. But Paddy loves taking the back. And it's like submissions are just his strength. And, you know, we see his striking come on a lot. But if there's any gap there, he's going to exploit that. And, I think I agree with the rest of the lads. You know, a win for Paddy. That's what I'm forecasting.
Fergus, obviously, Paddy, we know, we saw the fight against Josh Shampoo. He loves to do something spectacular. Do you see this being the case in this fight next Sunday?
Yeah, I think he can, because I think Shane Howell will give him opportunities to do that. In the lead-up to the Josh Shampoo fight, everybody talked about Paddy's submission game and how lethal he was on the deck. And Paddy came out in the first minute and dropped Josh Shampoo. And I think that set the tone for the whole night. And I mean, it was going to be a great night anyway, but I think when the 9,000 or 10,000 people in the O2 saw Paddy drop Sampo, they thought, right, well, here we go. This is it now. This is how good Irish MMA fighters are. So I think Howell is going to give Paddy opportunities to either, I mean, if they shoot out on the feet, I think Paddy might be a bit faster, probably hit a bit harder. And if he doesn't, if Paddy doesn't fancy the shootout, how, like I said, he'll give him opportunities to change levels, get a takedown and then just work towards the back, or even he doesn't have to work towards the back. I mean, there's plenty of stuff in Paddy's ammunition to get chokes from anywhere.
Mr. Fig O'Farrell, clean sweep?
Yeah, absolutely full house here. I mean, the Paddy Houlihan that showed up on UFC Dublin, I think that's Paddy Houlihan who beats 9 out of 10 flyweights on the roster. Just, you know, as Gus said, a lot made of the submission game in the build-up, and then he just, you know, annihilated Josh Sampo on the stand-up and just gave a really good mixed martial arts, well-rounded performance, you know, dominating on the feet and on the deck. Obviously, that was very, you know, followed by the very disappointing fight with Chris Saleda's change of opponent, that kind of thing. You know, Paddy still had a great performance. He got caught. A lot of flyweights would have been finishing that fight, and Paddy, you know, he girded in there and claimed fight of the night. And, you know, I think Paddy, in every interview he's done, he's mentioned about how much he's learned from that defeat. And I just think, you know, the Shane Howell, 5 submission defeats on his record, and I just think Paddy's going to make that 6 on Sunday.
Definitely, yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think Paddy's going to win by choke on Sunday night. It's written in the stars. Okay, ultimate selections. Let's start with Peter Carroll.
Yeah, I think he will submit him. Yeah, 100%. No, I think he's really if he knocks this guy down, he's going to be straight on him looking for a submission. Chokes, guillotines, rear naked chokes. He's very good at triangles as well, Paddy. But I can see him being on top of Howell. I can't see Howell taking Paddy down. So I can, I can see it. You know, a rear naked choke. If it's there, he's going to take it definitely. And Shane leaves that open. So
first round.
I don't know. With these two guys, obviously. Flyweights, it's very hard to predict a first round rear naked choke. I know Paddy did that in Dublin, but I can see him finishing. I don't know if it'll be the first round though.
Joe Riley,
the round is the hard one for me. I do think it's ending up in the submission, could be first or second. But one thing after you go around the panel, I'd be interested to hear from the lads of the talk, obviously coming out of Paddy's last fight on, you know, his corner. And I mean, do we know who's going to be in this corner? Obviously JK would expect to be there this next week, but obviously there was a lot of talk, you know, a lot of negative feedback coming back regarding the inadequacy of the corner, and just to get the lads' thoughts on that as well, it'd be interesting.
Yeah, definitely. Fergus Ryan?
Round one, and I am going to say that he will drop him and submit him. He'll probably take us back and choke him out. If Paddy gives us a round one like he did in both his UFC fights so far, like he, even though he dropped the decision to Canadis, he definitely won the first round, and that was a super high paced round. He did the same with Sampo. If he comes out, does that, you know, gives us a round one like he's done so far in his UFC fights, there's no way Howell keeps up with him, and there's no way Howell can survive. So I'm going to say round one submission.
Definitely. Just to add something there, I was on to Patrick on Friday, and Patrick mentioned that he possibly loaded up too fast after the weight cut, and that's why he slowed down in the second and third. We've never seen Paddy slow down as much as he did in that fight against Chris Galatas. So I think he's going to make adjustments there on that, and we're going to see Paddy at a lot higher pace, and it's going to sustain as well to the second and third round. But I don't see it going the full way. I'm going to go round two submission for Patrick Houlihan. Possibly a rear naked choke, I'd imagine. Possibly drop him, get him down, take his back, like Fergus mentioned. Fig O'Farrell?
Yeah, very good point, Niall. I agree with what you're saying. I think, you know, Paddy in his last fight put an absolutely incredible first round in. Then, you know, the pace slowed in the second round. And I think, you know, Paddy's a smart fighter. He knows he doesn't have to get this guy out of here in the first. I could see it going on in the second and third, and I think I'm going to go with an armbar just to be different.
Okay. And guys, as Joe mentioned there about the corner, there was some negative feedback towards Ashling Daly last time out. I had Mike Bon here on the show, and he mentioned that, and there was a few other people mentioning that. What's your take on that? We'll start with Peter.
Obviously, you know, it was an error. And I think the thing that I noticed about it was the fact that it probably gave Paddy, it probably panicked Paddy, the fact that there was a bit of hysteria going on around him.
Yeah.
But you know, when he didn't get a break, he didn't get to sit down. You know, yes, it's a problem, but I think that was the big factor behind the decision that night. No. I don't think that I couldn't say that.
Yeah.
I think Chris Kalidis, you know, I think maybe, you know, what the guys were feeling in Dublin that night, that's exactly how he felt out there. He looked brilliant. You know, he really looked fantastic. Yeah. Like, for a guy to just be, you know, sitting in Paddy's guard like that, and you know, basically being able to impose his will in that situation. Usually Paddy's chaining things together. it's a thing. I think sometimes in mixed martial arts, the media coverage, they tend to take these small things and blow them out of proportion. But yeah. I don't think I had a big knock on result on the actual result of the fight. But yeah, of course, now you're right, Joe. Like it certainly didn't help.
Definitely. And obviously, Fergus, John Kavanagh is going to be there this time in the corner. That's going to be a big difference.
It should be, yeah. I mean, Aisling has cornered Paddy more than anyone else. I think what happened was unfortunate. Mm. Like Pete said, I don't think it changed the result one bit. And equally, like Pete said, I think people are making a bigger deal of it than it actually was. Like, it's just unfortunate. It's just one of those things. And the fact that it's on telly and it was so... Mm. I mean, you could hear Aisling roaring at Artem for the stool, and so for the 10 seconds it happened, it just looks bad. I don't think it had any impact on Paddy, his performance. Maybe it did panic him a bit. I don't think it would have, to be honest with you.
I think Paddy sort of more or less explained why, speaking obviously on Friday, as I mentioned there. I think it was obviously the loading of the carbs on the Friday night that really slowed Paddy down.
Yeah, and it obviously would be JK and Aisling in his, John Kavanagh and Aisling in his corner. This time round, I mean, if he wins, does that mean it was because of the corner? I doubt it, you know.
Fig, what's your thoughts, similar to what the guys were saying there?
Yeah, absolutely, storming a take-up for me and all.
I tend to agree. Joe Riley, obviously, put it to you. You're the one who brought up the question.
I agree that I don't think it affected the result of the fight. I suppose I'm interested. I mean, like, obviously, you know, like with the combination of that and obviously the weight cutting issue for Ash in her UFC debut, I'd be interested to see how it affects her image going forward. But I agree. I don't think, Paddy's, the result would have changed either way. But I think it just more came across, and I'm not trying to be, super critical on last year. I just think it didn't help her a bit. But hopefully, obviously, in her own fight, she'll bounce back anyway in terms of correcting that kind of perception.
Just as a matter of interest, Joe, I didn't hear anything. I didn't go looking for it now either. But what were people saying about the incidents between round one and two?
I remember at the time anyway when it happened, the first kind of feedback I heard on it, I think, was in Sherdog on the beatdown after the bell, immediately after it happened. And they're normally the first podcast out there right after the fights anyway. But, basically hearing the phrase, like, look, absolutely terrible cornering, Boyash, and
Mike said it to me on the show as well.
Yeah. What did Mike Bond say?
Mike Bond said, Aisling Daly was basically a mess in the corner. Listen, let's not dwell on this, guys. Obviously, moving on to the next fight, Carl Pendrick going for his third straight victory in a row in the UFC, going up against Sean Spencer. Sean Spencer, I looked at his last fight against Paulo Thiago, decision unanimous, but in fairness, everyone was taken out Paulo Thiago. All great respect to Thiago. He's lost his last number of fights. This is a really, it's an interesting fight, I have to say. What are we going to see Carl doing this? Are we going to see different, his stand-up's improving? Is Carl going to look for a different facet, or is he going to go and look for the takedown in this fight? I'm going to put that to you first, Peter.
I think we're definitely going to see him striking. I thought for his last two fights we were going to see. I thought in Dublin, I thought he was going to try and take Mike King down. And then against Umulatov, I thought he was going to try and take him down because, maybe it's just from watching Carl on the way up on the European scene that he was just so dominant in that position. But I think you have to credit where it's due. He's trying to grow this game, and his striking has definitely been the biggest improvement in his game. And maybe in his last fight, the guy just didn't allow him. We didn't get to see what it was all about because, to be fair to Carl, Umulata was on the back foot for the whole fight. And that's a nightmare. That's a nightmare for anyone. We saw it with Hector Lombard there the other night as well. Borkman was on the back foot. It's very hard to fight someone like that. It's very hard to put someone down if they're just constantly moving back. All he wanted to do was hit him with the left hand there. And in Spencer, you have a guy who comes forward, who looks to exchange. He throws straight punches. He's got a bit of power to him as well. And I mean, it's going to be a firefight, I think. And this will be the matchup where we see how improved Carl's striking is. I mean, we've been seeing videos there, obviously, of him trained. He's looking very light in his feet, but we won't know until he's in the octagon with Spencer, and it is the perfect fight to for us to see how much it's improved.
Definitely. And Fergus Ryan, I'm going to put this to you next. You know, what should we expect from PT delve into a little bit there? What should we expect ultimately from Sean Spencer in this fight?
He'll bring gameness. He'll bring the fight to Cahill. He'll be competitive, and with the height of respect, I can't see him knocking Cahill out. I can't see him taking him down and submitting him. I think the only way Sean Spencer wins this is if he somehow drags it to a decision and gets the better on the scorecards. Now, I mean, we all know how somehow Cahill always has his own mental scorecard going during a fight and rarely drops a decision. That's how in the moment he is in his fights. So I with the height of respect to Spencer, I think he is second best in nearly everything in this fight. I think this is a perfect opponent for Cahill because Spencer's good, but he's not great at anything. I remember talking to Cahill, I think when he was fighting Shay Mills, and Cahill basically said, look, he'd been working really hard in his ground game and not just his takedowns and wrestling, but his submissions as well. But he fought BJJ black belts. So it wasn't the place or time to be, you know, taking people to the ground and going, you know, trying to chain submissions against the likes of David Bielkaden and Bruno Carvalho. Yeah. You know, he's been working hard in his striking, and then he comes up against Shay Mills, who's a killer on the feet. Mm. So it's not necessarily the time to be, you know, biting down and trying to exchange with Mills. Mike King was a bit, you know, it was a middleweight fight. It was a bit of a weird one. For Cahill, and then Umalov, Cahill wanted to have a good scrap with this guy and look to exchange in the feet and take him down, and it just never happened, like PT said. Spencer, though, is definitely going to walk forward. The only way Spencer has won fights, or not the only way, but the majority of his wins have come from high pace, high pressure, and it goes to the scorecards and he wins just by effort, if you like. He's meeting the wrong guy to try and get away with that in Cahill Pendred.
I think
Cahill is going to have his way with this guy. He's going to take him down at will, and I think he finishes him probably late on in the fight. Anyway, I think we definitely get out of the first.
We'll save your prediction for a moment's time.
Let me think about that.
Fig O'Farrell, we know Cahill is a huge, you know, he's a huge mental toughness and will about him. You know, do you think this is going to have to play into this fight? Do you think Cahill's going to have to, you know, grind it out, or are we going to see something different?
It's going to be interesting to see how Cahill approaches this one. I mean, I've been trying to watch as much of Spencer as possible in the last few weeks, and I noticed, you know, in one of his UFC fights, actually, the commentary team, I think it was Mike Goldberg was commentating at the time, mentioned that he was a former Golden Gloves champion. Now, haven't seen his striking, it's good, but I wouldn't have put it anywhere near Golden Gloves level. I mean, The guy has two knockouts in his MMA career. Cahill Pendred's not going to be scared by someone who has two knockouts. But just, you know, with his granite chin, his determination, his huge mental strength. Although, you know, where Cahill has looked weak in fights previously is the striking defense, I still don't think Spencer has anything to trouble him here. Spencer, he took his UFC debut against Natal on very short notice. He was tiny in that fight at middleweight. He's definitely a natural welterweight, but he's actually quite a small welterweight. I think Cahill definitely has the size, the strength advantage. And, you know, I enjoyed Cahill striking against Umalatov. I'd like to see, I think Cahill's striking will probably have again improved during this camp, and I'm looking forward to seeing it. So, yeah, as Gus mentioned, I think, like, these two are going to go head-to-head. I think Cahill's game plan may be, you know, to strike with him. But then I reckon in the back of his mind he'll know that if things aren't going his way on the feet, he'll be able to take him down, use his ground and pound and that kind of thing. But then at the same time, you know, things could be going fantastically on the feet. Even Cahill's kicking game, I thought, was exceptional in his last fight. And I believe we'll see a progression of that again. So I think predicting Cahill will either take the decision or a TKO victory here.
Joe Riley, going to put it to you. You know, where's this fight going to be won and lost?
To be honest, I think it all comes down to Cahill's approach. I think, you know, it's interesting that I found historically in Cahill's game, for me, his weakness has been he takes too much damage on the feet for me, like maybe too many chances. But he said, leading up to his last fight against Umalatov, that's where he saw his game improve leaps and bounds. And even his coach, John Kavanagh, said the same. And he was quite disappointed in and of himself in that he felt anyway that his performance in that fight didn't reflect the gains he's made in that area. And I mean, if he's really made the gains in that area, great. But you know, if I'm Cottle, I'm thinking, you know, make this a grinding war, clinching up against the fence, taking it down. I think it's interesting when you look at their method of victory ratios. Both have 8 decision victories, but Cottle's had a lot more TKO finishes. And I think, I mean, that grinding style wearing them out, and you know, that TKO finish is there for the taking. But I just hope we don't see a situation where, you know, if Cottle feels early on that he has his improvements show us a distinct advantage over Spencer, that he doesn't, you know, get caught careless in the process there, because I think there is a sure route to victory already there in his typical style historically from the Cage Warriors days of like pursuing that takedown, just wearing the opponent out, like a la Shane Mills basically.
Definitely. And Joe, what's your ultimate what's your ultimate prediction for this fight? It's got
I think if Cottle pursues the easiest path to victory, I think we could be looking at a late stoppage third round.
Fergus Ryan.
Okay, since Joe went 3, I'll go 2, round 2. The only way Spencer wins this is by decision, whereas Cottle can win it anyway. He can KO, TKO him, sub him. I think he will get a ground and pound victory in the second.
Peter Carroll.
Yeah, I think I can see him knocking him down with a straight right hand and then following up with strikes on the ground. We've seen Spencer get caught with that punch quite a bit actually. So I think if Carl hits him with all his power, he's going to send him down. And as we've seen before, you know, he can unload some of his ground and pound when he gets his opponents down. So yeah, I'll go round two for Mr. Pendred.
Figo Farrell.
Yeah, I'll go Pendred decision.
I'm gonna go Pendred decision as well. I think Sean's he's a bit of toughness, and I don't think he's ever been knocked out in his career. So I think it's gonna be a grinding battle, and I think Cottle's gonna come through and take a decision victory. Moving on to the main card of UFC Boston. Obviously we have Norman Park against Gleison Thibaut. This is probably one of the most intriguing fights in the card for me. Norman's obviously unbeaten in his last 11. Obviously just that draw thrown in there against Leonardo Santos, coming off a win against Kotani. And then we have Gleison Thibaut, a guy who's been on a big roll at the moment, a big powerful Gleison Thibaut, obviously coming off wins against Pat Healy, Piotr Tolman. He's 4-1 in his last 5, only that loss coming to Michael Johnson at UFC 168. Really, really fascinating stylistic matchup here. I'm going to start with you, Fergus Ryan. We just talk about it off air. This really is one to watch out for on the card.
Yeah, this is going to be a hell of a fight to start the main card. I would say, I think, you probably told me that Norman is a huge underdog in this fight, Niall, am I right?
I don't think a huge underdog, but I believe he's an underdog. I'll confirm that in a moment.
And I think that's massively unfair to Norman, because since, like, we would have been very familiar with Norman on the local circuit, and he was steamrolling guys, and he went into the tough house, and he did very well, and he seemed to get better and better in the house. He goes into the UFC proper, and he's got better and better every single fight.
Yeah, he's a slight underdog. The book lines here, I'm not going to name the bookie, but Gleison Thibaut is 8-11 on. Norman Park is 11-10 on match betting.
Yeah, Norman is I'm pretty sure he spent his entire camp up in Ballymena with Rodney Moore and the Next Gen Northern Ireland. So they will have game planned this. He always game plans with Rodney. He would have done a bit of training then in Alliance, or more than a bit of training, but he always game planned with Rodney and came back to Next Gen Northern Ireland to finish off his training camp before fights. So this one, he spent his whole camp with Rodney, and I'd say they've game planned this to within an inch of Thibaut's life, and I think they're going to get it spot on, and I can see Norman shocking a lot of people in this fight and coming away with a win, if not even a finish.
Yeah, brilliant stuff. Okay, let's go to you, Joe, next. Joe, we look at Gleison Thibaut, and the one thing, you know, I've watched over some of his fights there the last couple of days, and there's one thing that always stands out to me with a Gleison Thibaut. He's a guy who starts off extremely well in rounds 1 and 2, but always seems to fade. We know Norman can go, you know, 3 rounds plus if he wanted. He doesn't seem tired after most of his fights. Is this a crucial aspect of where this fight could be won and lost?
No, I think so. I think Thibaut, that you painted the picture perfect there, and that
thank you.
That's Thibaut's. that's Thibaut all over, isn't it? I mean, he puts the pressure on early. He uses his great size advantage over most lightweights to really overpower them the first two rounds, and you see him start to fade late second, early third. And I think if you're Norman Parks' camp, I think from a game plan point of view, you kind of know what Thibaut brings to the table, what approach he's going to take. He's going to try and make it a contest of strength to out-muscle you. So I think from that aspect, he knows where Thibaut's approach lies and has to work around that. But I'm not too sure. I mean, you look at Thibaut's last loss. It was against Michael Johnson by KO.
Yeah.
Very impressive. I don't know if Norman possesses the same versatility and finesse, I would say, as a Michael Johnson, or versatility in his game. I wouldn't be super shocked if Norman pulled off a finish. But I think the way this fight's going to go, it's very similar to the way I have the co-main event.
Yeah.
I think if it's finished, it's going to be Norman getting the finish with an upset. But I think if it goes the distance, it's going to be Thibaut 2-1. You'll see Norman really come on strong at the end of the third, but it might be a little bit too late. So I am, leaning Thibaut in this fight.
Yeah, I don't think Thibaut has ever won a third round in his UFC career. Let's go to you next, Fig. Fig, an area where Norman likes to work is obviously up against the cage quite a lot. He sort of bit of dirty boxing up the cage in the clinch and often looks for the takedown. Will Gleison Thibaut be too big and powerful for Norman to take down in rounds 1 and 2?
Yeah, no, unfortunately, I'm going to have to. Some people may disagree with me, but unfortunately, I'm going to have to say, yeah, I think he will. Even I was watching earlier today, I was watching Thibaut against Nurmagomedov. And we've all seen how good Khabib is. We've all seen what just an absolute monster the guy is. Arguably one of the best takedown artists in the UFC at the minute, maybe in UFC history. And, just go back and watch that first round with Thibaut. And Thibaut, he's just so gritty. He's just so strong. And, it wasn't until rounds 2 and 3 that Nurmagomedov was able to get Thibaut down. As good as Norman's judo is, and as good as he is in the cage fighting, I don't think he will get the takedown for the first 7.5 minutes of the fight. Where I think this fight is going to be won and lost for Norman is his striking. As Gus alluded to earlier, we just saw Norman blast so many guys on the feet, his karate, his kickboxing, some of his knees, his punches. Really versatile on the domestic scene. And, since he's gone up a step in competition, I actually think one of his best striking performances was probably... Yeah, he was absolutely electric in Manchester. That was a great fight. Also against Colin Fletcher, he impressed me on the feet. But I just think Norman's going to have to kind of either win this on the feet, which, to be honest, I think he has all the capabilities of doing it, but he has to win this on the feet or else a big rally in round 3 to get the sub down, or to get the takedown and submission.
Peter Carr, let's go to you next. Obviously, we've touched on Norman's boxing there. Norman's boxing is, it's just got better and better and better, but there hasn't been, there's only been that one real decisive finish in his last few outings, obviously against Kotani, but Kotani's subsequently been released from the promotion. Are we going to see Norman implement a boxing style in this fight? Is he, is he going to want to get in the clinch and against a powerful guy like Gleison Thibaut up against the fence, or is he going to look for that boxing to possibly try and win this fight?
Yeah, I think it's all going to be down to his footwork. Like the guy said earlier, there's no point in getting yourself involved in a clinch battle with Thibaut, especially earlier on. I think the only time we'll even see Norman going for a takedown might be in round 3 here, or he might mix it up halfway through round 2, but I can see a lot of footwork, a lot of movement in and out in the first round, and that could frustrate Thibaut. Norman's movement, I think his footwork is something that is just very hard for anyone to deal with. I mean, his own, I know he drew that fight against Leonardo Santos, but I don't think that was a draw at all. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it really
wasn't. Definitely.
His footwork is really good, and Thibaut, that's going to be really hard for Thibaut to get to deal with later on in the fights. As Fig was saying, there's no point in trying to take him down. Thibaut won't be going down anywhere until maybe the round 3 when he's tired. I think Norman can win this one. I think it's a good matchup for Norman. Once he doesn't involve himself in too many grappling grappling exchanges with the bell.
Definitely. Okay, let's go with our ultimate predictions then. Let's start with you, Figo Farley. Let's have a round on a method of victory, please.
Okay, one other point I forgot to mention in the breakdown was Norman was originally supposed to be fighting Jorge Masvidal on this card. So, you know, he's obviously would have been training his boxing a lot for that fight. And it's a fight I'm disappointed didn't materialise. So, you know, I think we're going to see improved striking from Park, and I'm going to go with Norman Park on decision. But I think he's going to be T-bow up, and it'll be kind of, you know, point striking, and he'll definitely outland T-bow and outthrow him. So Park for decision for me.
Peter Carroll.
Exactly the same as Fig there. I'm going with this one. Yeah, I think he'll outstrike him, and I think he'll have his hand raised for decision. And exactly like Fig said, point scoring kind of striking style.
Joe Riley.
Well, I don't think Norman's going to be drinking any Bushmills later on that night. I think T-Bell by decision. I think that's the way it's going to go. I just think that the first two rounds is going to be too much of a deficit to make up in the third round.
Fergus Ryan.
Yeah, a fair play to you, Joe, because somebody at some point was going to have to pick against an Irish fighter since they came in. So fair play to you. I admire your call, but I disagree with it. I think Norman is probably going to get his hand raised by decision, but I'll go different to the other lads just to be different, and I'll say he's going to stop him by ground and pound in the third. I think he'll wear T-Bow out. He'll start fast, he'll keep the pace high, and he'll just wear him out.
Yeah, T-Bow really does fade in the third rounds. You know, I watched that fight against Pat Healy, obviously the one against Nurmagomedov. He's a guy that he puts so much into the one and two, he cuts a huge amount of weight to get down to it. I'm gonna go with Norman to shade this. I'm very, very unsure of this fight, what way it's gonna play out. But I think Norman keeps it on the feet in the first round, keeps it at range, uses his pace, his footwork, as Peter mentioned, wears him down in the first two. I can see him winning definitely the third round anyway, because T-Bow is gonna be tired. I'm gonna go 29-28 Norman Park. He takes this one from me. Okay, let's move on to the co-main event of the evening, an absolutely massive scrap in the lightweight division. We have, obviously, Donald Cowboy Cerrone, who is stepping in on after having a fight 2 weeks ago at UFC 182 in Las Vegas, Nevada, where he defeated Miles Jury. Wasn't happy with the performance, wanted another fight as soon as possible, and he got his wish when, obviously, Eddie Alvarez fell out of this fight to face up against Benson Henderson, who's coming off a loss to Rafael Dos Anjos at UFC Fight Night. Henderson versus Dos Anjos. This is an absolute barn-burning fight. It's one of probably the best fight in the card, best matchup on the card, should I say. Really interesting stuff. The two-week turnaround, Joe, I'm going to put this to you first. The two-week turnaround for Cowboy, do you think this is ultimately going to pay off for Cowboy, or will it come to be a mistake on Sunday night?
Well, when I first heard about it, I was thinking, man, that's a big ask. But then when I threw that out on Facebook, someone immediately used to throw it back in my face because I picked Cormier over Jones. But like I alluded to earlier briefly, I think if this fight gets finished, it's Cowboy who finishes the fight. But I think if it goes the distance, I just think Benson, man, he just knows how to score points or even give the appearance that he's being he's doing more because he's active and constantly moving. I think it's a tough shout on 2 weeks notice. I mean, could Cerrone pull it off? Absolutely, he could, which makes this fight so exciting. But obviously, people would be asking the question: is Benson on a downturn after that knockout loss? You know, it's hard to say, or is it just a case that he got caught? He's normally very good at avoiding getting hit with big shots, and he normally can keep the pressure going. And I think one thing is always asked or looked at Cerrone, mentioned Cerrone in fight breakdowns, is that he's a slow starter. But against Miles Jury, that was complete opposite, and he said he tried to correct that, training and warming up for the fight and really getting the sweat on early before going out for the fight. And definitely, I think he has to do that here. I think he can't afford to give away any rounds against Benson. You're talking about someone who, I mean, like, he's notorious for getting decisions that really he shouldn't be getting, just because he appears to be busy. You know, easily the robbery of the year last year, I have to say, bar none, with the Josh Thompson fight for my money. Or, you know, you could say maybe Ross Pearson at Diego Sanchez. But I I'm leaning because the short notice bend on this fight, but you know it's going to be tough.
Peter Carl, they fought twice before, and we know that obviously we saw Benson Henderson come out on top. It's a long time ago, Peter. It's October 2009 and April 2010. You know, is that going to play into the equation in this fight? Do you think that's going to have any sort of effect on what's going to happen, or is it too long ago to actually play into consideration when you're making a fight pick?
No, I think it's absolutely huge. To have fought a person twice and to have lost to that person twice, that's a huge psychological barrier for a fighter. And you know that type of things, it does have a big impact on you. The fact that he's getting a third crack at Henderson here, you know, after two losses, it doesn't happen an awful lot. But if we've seen anything, Cerrone, he has made some. He's made a lot of improvements. Will he be able to kind of utilize his guard the way we saw in the last fight if he was taken down by Henderson? I think Henderson's top control is a lot better than Jury's. But, you know, everyone wants to see Cerrone win this fight, you know? Yeah. I really think when you think about Henderson's reign at the top of the lightweight division, I don't think people were happy with Ben Henderson as a champion. And do people want to see Pettis and Henderson again? You know, I don't know. No. And these guys are right in the mixer there for the number one contender spot after this. So, you know, I think from a fan's choice, it's brilliant that Cerrone's on the card. It's absolutely fantastic. And look, these guys, their first fight is one of the best fights ever. You know, it's an incredible fight. And I'm very happy he's on the card. I think everybody wants to see Cerrone winning. I don't think it's as easy as that, though. I think it's very hard on him, and I do expect Henderson to beat him.
And I'm going to put this to you, Fergus Ryan, next. Benson's coming off a loss to Rafael Dos Anjos. The TKO stoppage back in August. How much will this play into the equation as well? The fact he's coming off a loss, obviously his only other loss that was Andy Pettis when he dropped his title.
Yeah, I think it'll be a bit of a rocket for Henderson to get his, you know, not to make mistakes, not get caught. Like he was a bit, I don't want to say lazy or careless is probably the word. He was careless when he got caught by Dos Anjos. He was stuck up against the fence and he wasn't covering up very well. And, you know, he didn't get out of danger quick enough. And I think for a guy who usually, as Joe said at the top, usually is very good at avoiding danger and heavy shots, it was very un-Henderson-like the way he got caught by Dos Anjos. Having said that, though, I think he's a superb fighter. I know he's controversial, and you know he got a lot of decisions, and some people didn't think he earned most of them. But I think he's a superb fighter, and I really like him. And if you flip it to Cowboy, though, right? Cowboy is riding this wave of good feeling because he fights so often, because the week of fights he's out in his jet ski, or he's up in planes, or he's tearing around racetracks, and he's a man's man. And everyone, all the lads who are watching fights, think, oh yeah, that he is the man, because he does all this crazy stuff, and then he does an even crazier thing on a Saturday night by getting into a cage and fighting another guy.
Donald Cowboy Cerrone.
Yeah, I mean, you know, so he's riding a wave of goodwill, right? But if you look at the people that Cowboy has lost to, he's lost to Dos Anjos, who's obviously next in line for the title shot. He lost to Pettis, who is the champion. And he lost to Nate Diaz when he was on his way to a title shot, right? So he lost to three top contenders in the last, you know, two or three or 4 years. I think Benson Henderson is up there with that level of fighter that Cerrone loses to. And I think that's going to be... And he's lost to him twice, as Pete said.
Yeah.
I think this is a huge undertaking for Henderson. He didn't take much damage 2 weeks ago.
Mm.
But mentally, he's got to get himself up again for another massive fight. And an even bigger fight than the Jury fight.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Miles was great. He was riding an unbeaten streak. He was heading for a title shot if he kept winning. But I think a lot of people back Cowboy in that one.
Yeah.
This one's different because Benson is a former champion, UFC and WEC. He's got two wins. Okay, he's lost his last one, but, you know, underestimate him at your peril. I think he'll stop Cowboy.
You know, the winner of this is more or less, you know, going to be right up there in regards to title shot.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, if Cerrone wins, I think he's definitely guaranteed a title shot. Despite the fact he's lost to Pettis already, it's interesting guys putting weight on the short notice, the 2 weeks. I completely agree. However, interesting to note that Cerrone, this won't be his shortest length of time between fights. There was only 13 days between his debut against Nate Moore and Cruz Chacon. However, this is against two top 10 guys in the UFC. So obviously a lot bigger difference in quality and that kind of thing. Also, you know, as the guys mentioned, it's got to be a huge weight on Cerrone's shoulders, having lost to Henderson twice previously. And, you know, kind of Joe alluded to it as well. Henderson looked pretty poor in his last fight against Dos Anjos. You know, although some people debated the stoppage, you know, for me it was pretty clear it was a bad KO loss. And it's definitely a career-defining fight for Benson Henderson, you know. Is he going to surge and challenge for the title again, or is he just going to... Because if he loses this, for me, he's kind of just going to pitter around and see out the rest of his career, you know, winning two fights, losing two fights, that kind of thing. But although a lot of people want to see Cerrone as champion, Henderson was there and he's at the top for a reason. He's a very, very active fighter, and a bit like Carl Bendard, we mentioned earlier, he just kind of knows how to win fights and he's very intelligent in that regard. So I can see Henderson just being a bridge too far for Cerrone again.
Yeah, I see this being a fascinating fight. I'm actually going to go with Cowboy in this fight. I think the 2 weeks, you know, he wouldn't be taking the fight if he didn't feel as if he wasn't ready for it, because it's a huge challenge, obviously, against Benson and Henderson. But I just think Cowboy, over the years, we've seen the fights, and especially in the last couple of years, since he's made a few changes in his camp. Obviously, he's up in the BM Ranch, his own ranch, where he trains a lot now, and obviously being down in Jackson's, you know, the level of guys that he's training with, he seems to be coming on and on again. I think Benson, on the other hand, has slided slightly in his career. Obviously, that loss to Rafael Dos Anjos, you know, the performance against Rustam Khabilov was very good. You know, Josh Thompson, I don't think he took that fight. He lost Anthony Pettis. I just think there's been a little bit of a downturn in his career, and I think it's the opposite for Donald Cerrone, where he's really kicked on. And you know, this year alone, last year was four in the bounce. So I'm looking to see him, you know, win a plethora of contests this year. Maybe the title's a bridge too far, but yeah, I'm gonna take him in this fight. Ultimate prediction. So let's start with you, Peter Carl.
I'm gonna go for Henderson via decision.
Joe Riley.
Sam, Bendo by decision.
Fergus Ryan.
Bendo sub round one.
I'm gonna Fig O'Farrell.
Henderson decision.
I'm gonna go with Donald Cerrone. Submission off his back in the late second round. Okay, moving on. You know, possibly one of the biggest nights in Irish mixed martial arts history is going to be defined. Whether Conor McGregor is going to win, get that world title shot against Jose Scarface Jr. Aldo. You know, look. Let's look at this fight first of all. And I'm going to ask you, Fergus O'Farrell, first. When this fight was made, you know, it was more or less about keeping Conor active than anything else.
Yeah, I remember when the fight was announced being quite surprised, as it, you know, it seems like an age ago the fight was announced, but it was a very quick turnaround after Poirier. And, you know, there's a bit of an interesting reaction when this fight was announced. A lot of people were, you know, bearing in mind that Mendez and Edgar hadn't fought at this stage, and, you know, the usual media, mainly US-based, were, you know, we're only too happy to jump in with the he's never fought a wrestler, that kind of stick. And it was a surprising opponent, but when you go down from the UFC featherweight rankings 1 to 10, it's probably the opponent that makes the most sense. You go back and look at the career of Dennis Seaver. He's actually been in this position before, way back in, I believe it was 2011, when George Sotiropoulos was on an absolute tear. I think Sotiropoulos was 6-0 at the time, fighting in Australia, his hometown. And a win would have guaranteed Sotiropoulos a title shot. Maybe it was BJ Penn or Frank Yeager. I'm not sure who was champion at the time. But, you know, Seaver absolutely played the spoiler that night. You know, so Seaver's been in this position before. And, you know, again, in the build-up, all the focus was on Sotiropoulos, his excellent jiu-jitsu game, that kind of thing. And, you know, much in the same way that McGregor's dominated the build-up here. However, unfortunately for Mr. Seaver, I don't see him eking a decision this time around. I just think McGregor's striking is superior by, you know, tenfold. I just think you know, as Conor said in the promo, when he hits you, you stay hit. And I'm not sure Seaver's been in there with a striker of his class before, and I think he'll feel it early on in the first. And I do think McGregor's right; he will get it done in the first.
I'm going to put it to you next, Fergus. You know, look, we look at this fight, and no one's given Dennis Seaver any chance. All the promotion's been about Conor. There's literally, like, I don't think anyone in the world has picked Dennis Seaver to pull the upset here. Has he got any chance in this fight?
Of course he does. He's a puncher's chance. Everyone in a fight has a chance. It, you know, all you have to do is get one good one on the chin and he's either knocked out or it sets up a submission or a ground and pound. You know, so everyone has a chance. Absolutely, Seaver has a chance. Yeah. How big of a chance is it? I don't know. I don't think it's that big at all, if I'm being honest. Even the way Conor stands, you know, he's very upright, almost karateka-like. He's not your kind of typical kind of hunched forward boxing or modern mixed martial arts stance, which will make it hard for him to be hit. I think he's just far too fast for Seaver. Seaver, on the other hand, when he's a bit chinny, like if you land a good one on him, he does do the stanky leg a bit, and we know how hard Conor hits, and we know he doesn't have to hit you too often. And I just think, yes, Seaver has, of course he has a chance. He's got a puncher's chance. He's known as a kickboxer. I thought his wrestling has come on superbly in the last number of fights, but
it's a bridge too far.
It's a bridge too far. Yes, he's a chance, but it's a very, very small, slim outside chance, if I'm being honest.
Joe Riley, to you next. I'm going to look at it. You look at Dennis Seaver's last sort of 5 to 6 fights. He's been in there with some you know, top guys. Donald Cerrone, he's been there with Cub Swanson, coming off that win against Charles Rosa. Fergus alluded to it there, that you know, his wrestling has improved a huge amount. You know, you put the wrestling together and that dangerous spinning back kick. You know, what type of performance are you expecting from Dennis Seaver on Sunday night?
Well, first of all, Niall, on the wrestling aspect of things, I do think that Seaver's wrestling is underrated. I think his wrestling, I think, in my opinion, is better than Conor's previous opponents. I think it's better than Poirier's.
Is that something that people aren't taking into consideration, in your opinion, Joe?
Funny enough, I think so, but oddly enough, I think Conor's taking that into consideration. I think, although, if you watched The time is now press conference, and, you know, Conor, you know, throwing out his kind of, you know, smack talk and saying that, yeah, you're right, it is going to be a walkover. But when we saw, I think recently enough, Andrew McGatton over at Sevier basically interview Conor at the gym there, yeah, we saw a more sober, you know, kind of, I suppose, more, you know, less show business type interview by Conor there. And he was basically saying, look, you know, people are overlooking Dennis here. He has good takedowns. You know, he's a decent fighter. So I think Conor is definitely going to be taking him seriously, despite any kind of talk that appears to the contrary. But I think myself going at this fight now, I think for me, Seaver in his last fight, coming off the back of his suspension, he looked a lot. I know he's dropped a bit of muscle mass from 155 to 145, but for me, he looked a bit kind of a lot more leaner in the last fight. Didn't look as physically imposing. I don't know if that's going to be a factor in this fight, but for me, I just think speed is going to be a big factor. I think Conor has more power for him, but a lot more speed. I think he opens up with his usual kind of taekwondo, you know, karate style kicks to close the distance, sets Seaver off a bit, maybe land a spinning back kick of his own against Seaver. It's one of Seaver's trademark kicks. Unsettled Seaver a bit, close the distance, and then once he starts landing the boxing combinations, the uppercuts and whatnot, I think it's going to be a short night for Seaver.
I'm going to put it to you next, Peter Carroll. Peter, obviously, you know, we know what Conor's going to bring to the table. Are we going to see something similar than we saw in the last fight? Is Conor going to, you know, cut those angles, use that stance, change it up, the angles, you know, obviously the reach is going to be a big factor, I think, in this fight as well. You know, what's the ultimate outcome going to be in this fight?
I think, yeah, it's like, look, Seaver's a very good wrestler in the clinch, but I mean, I don't think he's going to get that close.
he doesn't do explosive double leg takedowns. Like, I mean, he gets a single off clinch, usually like a quick clinch, and he get a single leg. He doesn't explode into his takedowns. And I think that's the real, like, I mean, that's the thing that these guys are talking about when they're talking about McGregor not being tested by a wrestler. But I can't see, like, I mean, I think he's deteriorating as a fighter. He has that lead left hook, obviously, as well, that he throws. It's very dangerous, but I can't imagine this being anything else but a quick knockout for Conor. I can't see Seaver taking him down. He is a good wrestler. When lads engage a clinching game with him, he's a good wrestler. Yeah. But I can't even see it getting there. I can see a big forced exchange for Conor. Gus was saying, we've seen him rattled a few times now. Seaver, has he ever fought someone as powerful as McGregor? I don't think so. So I think it's got first round knockout written all over it.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I think Conor is going to use that reach, use the angles, and ultimately I think Dennis Seaver is going to walk into a left hook or something like that from Conor. I think we're going to see something fancy, and I think it's going to be quick. I don't think it's going to go outside 2 minutes. I'd agree with what Conor said, and I think we're going to roll on to Croke Park in Dublin or Lansdowne Road. So ultimate predictions, Fig O'Farrell, I'm going to ask you first.
Yeah, well, I'll go with Conor, get the knockout early. Could be one of many, or one of any strikes that finish it for him, but maybe something a bit special, maybe something a bit routine, like a left hook or something.
Let's go to you next, Joe Riley.
Yeah, no, I think, I agree with Fig there. I think, although it is possible that in the opening exchange of closing the distance, Conor might, you know, pull off something kind of more flashy, I do think the more likely finishes, it will be a quick KO, but it's going to come from the hands. I think possibly that uppercut that he's known for, or left hook. I think the taekwondo / karate part is more about closing that distance and breaking the opponent's rhythm from the get go. I think he does technically rely on the more fundamentals of the boxing inside to finish people. I think that's why it's going to go within the first round.
Fergus, right?
It'd be great if it was an early finish at first minute, as John Kavanagh said, or second minute, as Conor said. But for that to happen, you need Conor to go tearing across the cage to Seaver, or Seaver to be walking forward with his chin up in the air. And I don't think either of those things are going to happen. I think this is actually going to go... This is probably going to get out of the first round, just because Seaver isn't going to stand in front of Conor. And Conor's going to have to go find him. But Conor doesn't, you know, he's not reckless. He does crazy stuff, but he's not reckless. Like, he'll do it if he sees it and he thinks it's on. It's not just, he's just, you know, throwing caution to the wind. So I think Seaver is going to be on his bike, and I think that's why it's going to get into the second round. But I think he's going to be knocked out in the second round.
Peter, Carl?
Seaver knocks him out in the first 10 seconds. Now, McGregor, and early, very early. And I think Joe's right with the hands. But do you know what? I really see him trying to out taekwondo Seaver. Just for a little bit, nothing special, but I can see him trying to land a flamboyant kick on him, just to kind of as a showing of his dominance or whatever, given Seaver's taekwondo background. He likes to do things like that.
Yeah, I've played this fight over in my mind, numerous amount of occasions, and I just don't see where, you know, Dennis Seaver wins this fight. I'm going to go early as well, very early, as Peter said. A minute and a half, 2 minutes for me, Conor knockout in the first. So, guys, obviously, the rumours have been, just before we get out of here in a couple of minutes' time, the rumours have been that Jose Aldo is going to be there if Conor wins, and they're going to do a face-off, I presume, in the octagon. You know, how much are you looking forward to the potential of Conor winning and us having a world title fight possibly on our back door here in sunny Dublin, Ireland? In I believe that the talk is end of May. I'm going to put that to you first, Mr. Fig O'Farrell.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be absolutely great, especially for guys like ourselves, being around a long time. And let's be honest, even going back 2-3 years ago, if it was put to us, do you think there'd be any chance of a title fight, UFC title fight in Dublin in 2015? Fair play to you anyway, if you thought there would have been I'm brave enough to say I would have never seen it coming, to be honest. So yeah, it'd be absolutely fantastic. Such a buzz around the city last year, and that was just, you know, just to have them over and that kind of thing, more about the taking part, and now it's about the taking over. So yeah, it'd be absolutely fantastic to see, and bring it on, hopefully.
Yeah, it's going to be crazy. Peter Carroll, your thoughts?
Oh, it's 100% going to happen. Like, I've lots, like, look, Carl Bender was telling me, like, it's literally, like, it's definitely going to happen. It's just a question of which place. Yeah. Before Crow Park entered the conversation, McGregor's been talking about this for a long time. You know, before Poirier, he's like, yeah, 100%, it's going to be in the Aviva Stadium. He was looking forward to this year already. You know what I mean? We know that there's inquiries going back and forth. And look, we have Joseph Duffy signing there the other day. The Irish contingent keeps growing. All signs point to a stadium show. So 100%, I think it will happen. And
just the one thing I want to put to you, lads, obviously, you know, there's been a checkered past of, you know, planning permission and, you know, residents' complaints with Lansdowne Road and the Aviva Stadium. What are the UFC going to do this? Are they going to look at the size of the gate and the amount of money they're going to attract off the gate and take a possible hit on their pay-per-views in the US and have it at local time here? Are they going to look for the late-night start and obviously keep their pay-per-view audience? Because it's going to be very hard for them to get a late-night start here in Dublin, Ireland for a pay-per-view with the two mentioned arenas.
I think, to be honest, I don't see how they pull off that American time scale. They have to give in to the local time. But there's no way. I don't know what the particularities are in Sweden for the event coming up, obviously, with Gustafsson there and, you know, Anthony Johnson. But there's just no way that the Residents Association or anything like that are going to allow this to happen at 3 a.m. It's just not happening. I think that's another intriguing aspect of the lead up to this fight for me, because by all indications, they've even said in their last pay-per-view when they had Conor being interviewed by Joe Rogan, the stadium show is in their sights. But I just like, and the fact that they don't, like in the last few years, they haven't gone for a numbered event outside a US time slot. They've adjusted their international events to suit the North American audience. But I just can't see that happening here. There's just like, I think for a zoo, for anybody to go in with this plan of, oh, we'll take for granted, we'll get this. If hopefully they're not that short-sighted, but I just can't see them pulling off. I think they're going to have to give in and concede on a local Irish time here, you know.
Fergus Ryan, what way do you see that potentially going?
But there's a couple of things. Joe's hit on a few of them. Like, there's no way you can have a show in one of those stadiums running basically through the night. It'd go on till something like 3 or 4 a.m, which you won't have, because you've got curfews because they're in residential areas. Another factor is the weather. Like,
exactly. Yeah.
You know, May. I mean, I'm glad you said sunny Ireland at the start, but that's you know, that's during the day. If it's at night, if they do skew
well,
it
we
to,
don't get any sun during the day. What are you on about?
If it's at night, if it's in the middle of the night, it's going to be cold. Yeah. It could be raining, and there could be a gale blowing through the middle of the stadium. So I absolutely agree with Joe. They can't do it on US time. But how do they... I can't imagine a title fight as big as this being not on a numbered event and not being a pay-per-view.
I 100% agree.
So I don't know. It's going to be a tricky one. I mean, of course, I absolutely hope and I expect it will be here and it will be in one of the stadiums. But the other stuff, I just don't know.
Yeah, it's complicated business. Peter, just going to ask you that question. I touched on it there. Do you think the UFC are going to be willing to, you know, they're going to make a huge amount if it was in Crow Park off, you know, a massive, that would be a huge gate, 90,000 people, you know, they'd be looking probably up, I'm sure, gate receipts up to somewhere in the region of 5 to 7 million euro. So whatever that is in dollar, I'm not too sure. You know, are they going to, you know, are they going to do it on Irish local time and do a numbered event? How do you feel about that?
I think they have to do it on Irish local time. Never mind how it's going to affect them pay-per-view. Yeah. Can you imagine 90,000
exactly.
Irish people out at 6 o'clock in the morning walking around the city centre? It'd be a disaster. Yeah, I think they need to do it on Irish time. And, you know, and it's worth their while to do it. You know, I mean, there's a huge amount of money involved here. And absolutely, I think they have to do it on Irish time. Yeah. And as Joe said, the residents just want to allow it if they were trying to do it later.
And just before we get out of here, guys, obviously it's going to be a massive, massive card this weekend. It gets underway, I believe, at 11 o'clock on a Five Pass, and then onto BT Sport at, I think, 12 o'clock, and then the main card kicks off at 2. You check your TV for local listings. I'm not 100% sure on that, but I'd imagine it's around about that time. Guys, obviously, I know you. Everyone here is pretty busy this week. Peter, let the guys know where they can find you on Twitter, and mention maybe anything that you've planned coming up for the week, and I know you're going to be over, obviously, in Boston.
At PT Carroll, PETESY Carroll. And yeah, I'll have stuff coming up. Hopefully we'll have 3 pages of MMA in the Mirror over the fight weekend, and hopefully we'll have a few Fightland articles, and severemma.com will be doing a lot of stuff for them as usual. So yeah, check it out, please.
Pete, we do appreciate the time. That's Peter Carroll from severemma.com, Fightland, and the Irish Mirror. Joe Riley.
Yeah, well, you can catch me as always at JoeRiley1689 on Twitter, and hopefully we expect the coverage you'd expect from us, especially with any of our lads fighting on the card, and expect to see some pieces out on the site. And I'm not too sure if we have anything else in the pipeline this week.
We've lots of podcasts coming up. I've up to 2 or 3, and then we'll be getting some video footage as well. So look out for that, obviously, on Talking Brawls. I'm Fergus Ryan. Where can the guys find you?
You can get me at GusRyan100 on the Twitter. I should have some stuff on independent.ie and satanta.com/MMA. We should have at least one Satanta MMA show podcast coming out this week as well.
Ooh.
Far superior quality, obviously, to what you're listening to. The independent.ie is probably where the main stuff this week will be coming out, previews and that. But it'll all be filtered through at GusRyan100.
Fig, would you like to join me on Ireland's premier mixed martial arts podcast this week?
You're going up to Tanta, are you, Noel?
No, I'm washing my hair.
Fig being cheeky here. Fig, where can the guys find you?
FergoF, MMA, on Twitter.
Excellent. She's a man of a few words tonight. Fig O'Farrell sitting here beside me in studio. He said he's falling asleep here to me. We've lots of stuff coming up this week. A number of podcasts. Obviously, I've mentioned, if you follow us on Twitter at tbmma.com or Talking Brawls, and at Niall McGrath 4. We've a big week, obviously. Going to be catching up with Chris Beale this week on the podcast. And we're going to obviously be talking with Paddy Hills, and check that out. And obviously, big interviews coming up later on. The week after, I'll have Dan Henderson on the show, Ryan Bader. So check that out. In the coming weeks, and obviously going to be lots of stuff on the site this week. So guys, do appreciate the time, all of you stopping by to come on tonight, and it's always a pleasure to have you on the show, and really looking forward to Boston this weekend, so I'm sure you guys all are. So do appreciate you checking out the time to listen to the show tonight. So from Niall McGrath, Peter Carroll, Joe Riley, Fig O'Farrell, Fergus Ryan, it's good luck and good night. Thank you.